Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, we're 4 months out from healthcare reform passage. The polls are drifting up, but you know, it feels a little like a high-level chess match with both sides positioning their pieces. We saw the Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee try to box in Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan, asking her to recuse herself on all future healthcare-related matters. She demurred, as she said, she didn't work on any health reform matters as Solicitor General, and the president moved to protect the health reform bill by putting his field general in place, Don Berwick, bypassing the Senate procedures. There are hundreds of decisions that need to be made to implement the bill if they're going to be successful.
And you know, I was thinking this morning, it's just about the 1 year anniversary since the House first released its version of the bill last July. So certainly a very eventful year. And that two-dimensional chess game that you talked about, I think may actually be a three-dimensional one because the states are playing such a huge role here. And what a difference we see state to state. We have 21 states that are getting ready, preparing for health exchanges, and setting up commissions to oversee the whole health reform implementation process. And on the other hand, we have about 20 states that are filing suit saying the health reform bill is unconstitutional and can't go forward as it is. So we're going to have a very interesting time getting back to the Supreme Court discussion, seeing what happens in response to those states.
And you know, the benefits are still rolling out for the health reform bill. 4 million small businesses were notified that they might be eligible for a tax credit to defray the cost of health insurance, and a few hundred thousand Medicare beneficiaries who've reached that donut hole in Medicare coverage will be getting a check for $250 quite soon.
Well, that will certainly make some people very happy. And now we're going to turn to somebody who I consider a consummate chess player on the American political landscape, and that's an American leader of many decades, Lowell Weicker, former Connecticut governor, U.S. senator, and currently the president of the Trust for America's Health. The Trust has been working to modernize the public health system in America and bring prevention solidly back to the center of health and healthcare. The Trust addresses a range of issues and scores how well states do in investing in effective public health measures. They're known for those public health report cards and also their aptly named F as in Fat report that tracks obesity trends and policies.
No matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. You can subscribe to iTunes to get our show regularly downloaded. Or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com.
And as always, if you've got feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Now, before we speak with Governor Weicker, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, for the headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. The administration announced new regulations under health care reform that will require health plans to cover recommended prevention services with no copays, deductibles, or other out-of-pocket fees. The rules would extend this prevention benefit to 31 million people in new employer-sponsored plans and to 10 million people in new individual plans next year. Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says the administration is laying the foundation to help transform America's healthcare system into one that focuses on keeping every American healthy.
It's in our best interest as a country to make recommended preventive care widely available, to make it affordable, and to make it convenient for American consumers. And that's what we're trying to do.
The rules will eliminate copayments, deductibles, and other charges for blood pressure, diabetes, and cholesterol tests, many cancer screenings, routine vaccinations, prenatal care, and regular wellness visits for infants and children. Other services offered at no cost also include counseling to help people stop smoking, screening and counseling for obesity, and HIV testing. And the president is committed to combating AIDS with his own domestic HIV/AIDS plan. He announced a new national strategy last week that calls for AIDS relief in three major ways.
Reducing new HIV infections, improving care for people living with HIV/AIDS, narrowing health disparities. These are the central goals of our national strategy.
The CDC estimated that 1.1 million Americans were living with HIV/AIDS in 2006. Although annual AIDS deaths have declined, the number of people living with HIV is growing. HIV/AIDS advocates say the healthcare reform legislation is an important step for people living with HIV, but more resources need to be dedicated to fighting the disease, especially in communities of color. The National Action Plan will redirect money to population groups at the greatest risk, including gay and bisexual men and minorities. The announcement comes as state programs that provide AIDS drugs to patients with HIV grapple with growing waiting lists for the critical medication that decreases the spread of HIV and prevents the progression to AIDS. Secretary Sebelius announced last week that she will provide $25 million to states to help pay for the drug treatments, which average more than $12,000 a year. This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're exploring public health and what efforts are being made to improve the system. The Trust for America's Health is a national leader on this front, and the organization has recognized the need for stronger prevention and public health preparedness policies in order to improve the health of all Americans as we transition our healthcare system into one that provides better healthcare to all. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act legislation is aligned with the Trust's goal to expand investments in prevention and public health programs. Included in the legislation is the Prevention and Public Health Fund, $15 billion over the next 10 years to support prevention and public health programs. According to Jeff Levy, the Trust's executive director, this could translate into anything from a national campaign to promote immunizations and a better understanding of the safety of vaccines to a narrower neighborhood approach that puts lights in a playground or negotiates a mixed-use agreement with a school so the playground can be open after hours. The goal is to build healthier communities with a particular emphasis on eliminating barriers to good health for low-income residents. However, the administration recently announced that a significant portion of this year's prevention funds will go toward healthcare workforce issues instead of the original intent to allocate the money toward community prevention and public health. Only half the money, $250 million, will go toward community and clinical prevention, public health infrastructure, research, and public health training. The other $250 million will go toward workforce development. The Trust CEO, Jeff Levy, said that they will work with the administration to make sure that next year's funds will be strictly allocated to investing in specific community prevention programs like the newly authorized Community Transformation Grants, also expanding state and local health departments as they move toward accreditation, and creating a new program of public health services and systems research. Let's turn now to our interview with today's guest, the president of Trust for America's Health, Governor Lowell Weicker, to learn more about America's future public health system.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Lowell Weicker, former U.S. Senator and Governor of Connecticut, and current president of Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit, nonpartisan public health policy organization. Welcome, Governor Weicker. You left an impressive legacy during your years in the United States Senate. You helped shape the Americans with Disability Act and played a major role in strengthening the National Institute of Health. But after leaving office, you took on a new cause, public health. You're now president of the Trust for America's Health, which is working to modernize the public health system in America. With national health reform now underway, what's the major focus of the Trust for America's Health, and how does public health fit into the federal health reform legislation?
Well, it has a large place in the legislation that was passed, in the sense that a big chunk of dough goes to what is known as community transformation grants, in the sense of being able to go ahead and shape the community to keep people healthy, bicycle paths, playgrounds, the types of facilities which encourage physical activity. It's also true that the public health piece in the legislation addresses prevention rather than cure. And obviously prevention is much, much cheaper than the cure process. You know, I'm going to use this occasion to cite something that was said to me within the last 24 hours so I can make a point to all your listeners as to the healthcare legislation. This person was opposed to the legislation and didn't want any healthcare legislation. And I said, well, I'm not there. I said, I certainly agree that there are many parts of the healthcare legislation that can be improved. Maybe there should be some additions. But to go ahead and say no to the entire concept just defies reality in the United States of America. And this person turned to me and said, well, I would rather go ahead and tear the whole bill down and then start building a new bill. Well, if this individual realized the years that it's taken us to get to this point where healthcare becomes a priority for all Americans, you just wouldn't make a comment like that. And yet I think that's a prevailing attitude among many people, especially in the political sense. So I want to make clear that nobody is stating that what's out there now is perfect, but it's a hell of an important step forward. And that's, to me, the main thing. The train is on the track, and that's the first time that's happened.
That's a great observation. Great.
Yes, thank you. And Governor, this past decade, even the past couple of years, certainly brought a real wake-up call about the need to bring the public health system into the 21st century. I think of bioterrorism and H1N1, the natural disasters, as well as all of the chronic diseases that call for a strong public health response. We're really interested to know more about the Healthier America project of the Trust for America's Health. It includes a blueprint for a healthier America, really modernizing the federal public health system. What progress have you seen with that modernization in the last few years, and what do you think we can look forward to in the coming couple of years?
Well, as you know, we've issued several reports on the component parts of a total plan. Obesity, smoking, these types of matters, which are prevention. Do I see? Well, let's take, for example, let's just take the public health grading of the systems in the 50 states. We issue a report card for every state, and quite frankly, the results have varied from year to year. The report card is based on what money is devoted to public health in a particular state. How many public health experts are there in the state? What do they do to get people to come into the public health system? And so on and so on. So has that had an impact on what the states are doing? Yeah, because it has somebody looking over their shoulder trying to protect the public interest. And sometimes the states have done very well, and the next year they just fall off the map because they figure they can cut all the funding for public health. Mm-hmm. One thing that bothers me, for example, in the current economic climate, is that public health is going to be one of the first things to be tossed out the window. And that would be disastrous in terms of where we go health-wise. It's important to note, for example, on one aspect of public health, the obesity, which we've touched upon, that this generation of young Americans born now has a lower life expectancy than those before. Well, that'll give you an idea as to the importance of addressing obesity.
Governor, as you noted, one of the big focuses of the Trust for American Health is prevention policies. You've worked with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. You released a new public opinion survey, which finds that Americans rank prevention as the most important health care reform priority and overwhelmingly in support increasing funding. But at the same time, I know you're very concerned as a former governor, and you just mentioned it now about the fiscal realities that state governments will face, many of whom are going to be forced to cut spending. What advice do you have to your fellow colleagues, your fellow governors, about what they should do in terms of how to prioritize prevention and public health activities in this sea of red ink that they have?
Well, the same advice I'd go in describing the national health plan. I know we hear lots of talk from the opponents of the national health care bill as to how much money it's going to cost, with nobody saying, okay, there is a big public health piece in here which actually saves you billions of dollars. Look, we all agree the health scenario in the United States right now is disorganized. It's very expensive. It's leaving people totally out of the circle of care. I mean, it's a mess is the best way to describe it. And to go ahead and straighten that mess out is not going to be an easy task. But public health is one area I think that even in putting the bill together, Republicans and Democrats had no argument over the public health section. And what really made me mad, as a matter of fact, down in Washington, was in the old days, you could agree or disagree on different aspects of legislation, but nobody said, quote, no to the entire concept. And that, in effect, is what happened in this past go-around.
Governor, I'm glad you raised the public health component of the health reform bill. We were, of course, very happy to see the Prevention and Public Health Fund included with the intention to provide financial support for prevention and public health programs, I think $15 billion over the next 10 years. I've been interested to see that a significant portion of the fund right now is being allocated to healthcare workforce issues, especially primary care workforce development. We all recognize how important that is, but are you concerned that this will take money away that was intended for the public health programs?
No. You know, there's obviously going to be a jockeying back and forth here as the whole country operates within very narrow financial parameters. But if I can only get the public to see that what's being done in the overall is going to benefit each of us, then I'm happy with the situation. Now, look, what bothers me, and I got a specific example I can to illustrate my point. If you ask the 50 states, what are you doing with the tobacco settlement money? I bet you're going to get a variety of answers, none of which have to do with tobacco cessation of smoking.
Mm-hmm.
They use that money to fund about everything else in the budget, including right here in Connecticut.
Right.
And that's outrageous. That money was specifically meant to go ahead and bring an end to smoking in this country, which is one of the major causes of death. And certainly there's no excuse for not following the mandate that was imposed. Well, that's the only thing that bothers me in terms of the various component parts of the health bill. Are people going to start to use the money for their own purposes rather than the purpose that were designed in Washington?
Today we're speaking with Lowell Weicker, president of Trust for America's Health. Governor, last year's swine flu epidemic gave us all a front row seat at seeing what a major epidemic would do and the strains on resources that it could create. And although it turned out to be less devastating than the initial predictions were, it was certainly a wake-up call to look at our public health preparedness. Do you think the country's ready for another threat like this one? And how's the trust involved in helping states prepare?
Of course, our experience worries me. The only reason I'm chuckling is my number one aide at the Trust for America's Health, who now has moved on to the FDA, is a lady by the name of Kim Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Kim was assigned the duty of the swine flu epidemic, and she threw her heart and soul into that. And like many people, we tried to make it so that we were truly prepared for what everyone believed was going to be a pandemic. Well, as it turned out, that didn't happen. And what worries me now is the next time we say there's going to be one, nobody's going to believe us.
Mm.
Believe me, these things happen. And the things that belong to nature and to God are not things that we can go ahead and dictate within our human population. So, yes, I think the states, by virtue of the preparedness lessons of the swine flu, are better prepared today and will be for a few years. But if nothing happens, I think that'll probably fade from their memory, whereas it's a very real possibility. And I might add, you have to point out that we live in a global society more so than ever, so that what happens in the middle of Africa can all of a sudden, in a matter of 48 hours, happen in the middle of the United States. The interaction, you know, being as rapid and as numerous as they are. So hopefully the country learned something, even though the epidemic was not as severe, but hopefully those lessons will last for a while before they fade from memory.
Governor Weicker, we do live in a global world and culture, and when you look around this country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I think the United States, let me say one thing off my chest, I think the United States could play a far greater role in the world than it does in terms of disease prevention and health care, et cetera. You know, we've always excelled at the business of life. That's been the United States up until very recently, when all of a sudden we're very much involved in the business of death vis-a-vis the various wars that we're waging. I mean, an example, and I don't know the exact statistic, but I heard this myself on, I think, public radio the other day, is that we have no vaccine for malaria. We all agree. Not there yet. And yet, it only cost a few million dollars to supply the main ingredient against malaria, which is mosquito netting. And we ought to be able to distribute that to every man, woman, and child in the world. And we're talking millions. We're not talking billions. It's very inexpensive, but it's the only thing we have at hand. You know, I remember when I got into a huge debate here in the United States with the far right over the matter of AIDS, and specifically that aspect of it, which called for sex education. And this was before we had the various cocktails, the various, we still don't have a vaccine, the various matters that could go ahead and ameliorate the disease. And Jesse Helms and others refused to listen to the matter of sex education. I said, listen, I said, if you don't do this, it's the only tool we have at hand to prevent AIDS, because once you get it, you're dead. Now, that's not the case today, but it sure as hell was in the 80s. And what I'm trying to say to you is that we can play a significant role with not so much money in terms of saving life around the world if we apply ourselves to that. Instead, we've chosen to spend trillions on war, and we're not very admired for it. At the same time, many of our philosophical opponents in the world are sending medical teams and medical systems around the world. We do it better than anybody else, but we're not doing it to the extent that we should.
Today, we've been speaking with Lowell Weicker, former U.S. Senator and Governor of Connecticut and current President of Trust for America's Health. Governor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's great to be with both of you.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on a program specifically targeting kids and teens in California called Rethink Your Drink. Many people don't realize just how many calories beverages can contribute to their daily intake, especially when it comes to excess sugar. The single biggest dietary source of added sugar is sugary drinks. In one regular 20-ounce can of soda, there are nearly 17 teaspoons of sugar. Daily consumption of these sweetened beverages dramatically increases a child's risk for being overweight or obese later in life, which can lead to type 2 diabetes and heart disease. This summer, all YMCA summer programs in the Gold Coast, California region will be learning about the Rethink Your Drink program, and both parents and kids will be invited to participate in an 8-week summer challenge. In addition to the final prizes, everyone will receive a poster and a water bottle to help them make healthier beverage choices, such as water or 100% fruit juices. It's part of a campaign by the San Luis Obispo Public Health Department aimed to bring attention to the sugary content of soda and other popular sugar-sweetened drinks, teach proper nutrition labeling, and offer insights into healthier drink substitutes. In order to reach as many people as possible, the campaign offers free training, presentations, and educational material to local organizations, schools, and programs. Different counties in the region are conducting their own Rethink Your Drink launches this summer, and hopefully other public health departments around the country will eventually follow suit. Teaching kids to reach for a cold glass of water this summer instead of a sugary beverage, and to keep that habit up indefinitely, now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.